Welcome to El Telejón's La Liga Weekly. So, of the top five, only Barcelona won. None of the bottom five lost, although Eibar didn't play because, for weird reasons, the collapse of a landfill site threw up a poisonous gas cloud, and so their game was called off. The Basque-ish derby that was played saw Osasuna get a win away to Athletic. Terry Gibson, shamefully, so has only seen 8.5 games this week in La Liga, Terry, because he missed the start of the Sevilla game, breaking your recent record. And, of course, you'll have to reschedule. You and La Liga will have to get together and reschedule that Eibar Real Sociedad game.
At my convenience.
Yes, when you're all ready, yes. And the environment is a bit more conducive to people running around. Right, shall we start at the end, as it were? Real Madrid, Celta Vigo. Joseph Aidu and his teammates take down Zidane, literally, in his case.
Yeah.
And it's thrown the title race a little bit more open, hasn't it? Real Madrid dropping points for the first time in quite a while. And are we looking at Zidane's team selection here? Are we pointing the finger at sort of Bale or Marcelo or not? What's the fair interpretation of it?
Yeah, no, I don't think we can point the finger at Zidane. I mean, you look at those players that started. Marcelo has, no matter what people think, he's served Real Madrid well. He should be trusted to be able to play and perform adequately enough against a team that are fighting a relegation battle at home. Bale, Benzema, Hazard, I think, in form. They should be the first choice front three. Hazard, of course, just come back from injury. Gareth Bale is a long way short, I have to say, of his best form. I've mentioned in the podcast recently that he isn't a decisive player at the moment for Real Madrid. He should be. He potentially can be, which he's proved over the years. But at the moment, I would imagine that would be, you know, I think Mendy plays in the big games coming up instead of Marcelo. And I think Hazard, as soon as he's back fit, I think he's an obvious to start for Real Madrid's strongest team. Possibly the one issue is there's one position, and it's Bale's position, because he's not doing enough to convince Zidane that he is rightfully the first choice player. So it'd be interesting to see if a player automatically directly takes his place out in that wide attacking position, or does it give Zidane the opportunity to play Isco and Kroos and Modric and Casemiro and Valverde, mix it up in midfield, play an extra midfield player and play Hazard and Benzema as the front two. So I think it's a wasted opportunity for Gareth Bale. We hear so much talked about him. We hear so much from his agent about how he's happy and enjoying life playing for Real Madrid and living in Spain, living in Madrid. I want to see the bloody evidence of it now, that he wants to stay at the club and he wants to, you know, get his place back as an important player at Real Madrid, an important player in world football. So I think that was, again, a wasted opportunity. And he's getting the opportunities. We can't criticise Zidane for picking Gareth Bale. I mean, the majority of managers throughout the world, if they've got the opportunity to pick Gareth Bale, Hazard and Marcelo, they'll pick him in any game, let alone a game at home to a relegation-threatened Celta Vigo. So I don't think it was a case of we can blame Zidane. I was coming on to this podcast prior to that game thinking, how much stick can I give Barcelona without going over the top? And they've won. And now the focus is on, you know, Real Madrid performance, which really was lacking. Every now and then they have a performance where they get complacent. They just switch off. You know, big games are coming up. I know they don't play in the Champions League this week, but, you know, it was a little bit complacent the way they started the game, the goal they conceded. The defence wasn't as tight as it has been lately. And then when they went 2-1 up, we saw the real, you know, the genuine Real Madrid. They come back, they didn't panic, they got the equaliser, they got the second goal. Like me, they probably thought, well, that's the game done and dusted now. But I'm not playing. They have to play for the 90 minutes. They have to see the game through. And it's an ongoing situation that's going to be a problem for Real Madrid. They rely heavily on their defensive stats because, again, they don't score the goals that their performances should do. So you're looking at this game today, they play pretty well, they had lots of ball. Kroos gets the first goal, Ramos gets the second from a penalty spot. So that goes to show how important the role of Gareth Bale is. I think that I heard in commentary it's 11 months since he scored at the Bernabeu, which is absolutely ridiculous. And, of course, Hazard has been, his season has been punctuated by a long injury. He's only got one goal this season. So they need to find someone who can hit the back of the net on a regular basis.
Yeah, Hazard's played, before tonight, played 604 minutes in La Liga. It's not a lot, is it, for a player that they paid so much for? And it's something that we overlook, I think, sometimes when we're talking about the value of a player. When you compare that to, say, a Griezmann or Iñaki Williams or somebody, these guys who never miss a game. I know Williams gets rotated sometimes, but, you know, hardly ever injured. And so it's you know, it's a significant factor. I mean, I liked Hazard's contribution. It's good to see him wearing a Real Madrid shirt, isn't it? Because was it November? I think we last saw him play when the Champions League was on, wasn't it? That he last figured. So are they easing him back in so he can play against Manchester City? Try and play a full game in that one.
I would think so, wouldn't you? I would think that that's the prime objection, the fact that he's played in this game. There was talk that he might have been able to have played last week at Osasuna, but they wasn't sure it was the right conditions for him to play in. So a home game against Celta, I know it ended up 4-1 to Real Madrid at Osasuna, but I think they were expecting a fiercer contest. But Celta at home, they probably thought it was the ideal game to bring him back in. They next week are away to Levante. He'll have to play in that. I wouldn't be surprised to see him start games coming up in the next few weeks and come off with 10, 15 minutes to go for maybe three or four games, which includes Levante, which includes Manchester City. But if they can get a good 60, 70 minutes out of him, at his best, he is that player that I was talking that, you know, that Gareth Bale needs to be. So I think we have to remember as well, he didn't set the world on light at the start of the season. There were signs that he was getting better. The Spanish press, of course, are desperate for him to do well. Why wouldn't they be? But I think when they were clutching at straws a little bit, went towards the just before he got injured, when he was playing okay. I think we've seen more of him in the Premier League, and we know he's capable of far better than what we've seen so far in a Real Madrid shirt. So hopefully, from Real Madrid's point of view and Hazard's point of view, and us that like watching La Liga football, he's not going to take as long to get going as he did at the start of the season.
In these situations, we should always remember to praise the underdog that got a good result. So Celta Vigo, we've been very critical of them in not so recent weeks, but then last week they beat Sevilla. This week they get a draw away at the Bernabeu. That's a very good haul for a club that is still very much in the relegation battle.
It is. And then when you see the players that they brought on tonight, you can understand why we are critical of them. I mean, to bring off the bench, Denis Suarez, Santi Mina, Pione Sisto, that's three really good subs, good attacking subs. They were forced into it because they were trading and behind and trying to get an equaliser. But the quality is there. So I think that's why I think it's fair that we've criticised them this season, going through managers again. They rely heavily on Aspas, so it was good to see Smolov get a goal. It was good to see Santi Mina get a goal. It was good to see the impact Denis Suarez had when he came on. It was smashing to see Rafinha, possibly his best game in the season. And you look at Celta and you know, they shouldn't be down the bottom, but they are. And, you know, those 4 points picked up in the last two games, I think the win against Sevilla set them up in terms of confidence for an improved performance against Real Madrid. And they looked a decent team. I mean, it was 1-0 at half-time. They go behind 2-1. For 10 minutes or so, you're thinking that Real Madrid are going to run away with it, get the third goal, the next goal of the game to take it away. And then slowly but surely, with the introduction of the subs and the changes made, back three or back five went to a back four. And suddenly they start getting a bit more possession. And they were fighting back. And that's what you do when you're down the bottom of the league. But to get a point there, it's worth a lot more in terms of spirit and belief for the Celta players. And it was important because the teams at the bottom are improving. They're starting to pick up points. And they've closed the gap, certainly, on three or four teams that thought they were well and truly safe. But so it was a massive point for Celta.
Right then, Terry, deep breath. Barcelona against Getafe, how critical are you going to be?
It's an interesting one because for the first 10, 15 minutes, Getafe had two, three, four counter-attacks where they either failed to get a shot away or it was down to Pique, Umtiti, to Stegen to dig Barcelona out of trouble. And then Barcelona, I thought, for 20, 25 minutes in the first half, you could see what Setien's trying to do. So they moved the ball around quickly. They won the ball back quickly. Busquets is a changed player. I can see the influence on... The most interesting aspect for me has been Ter Stegen, his role under Quique Setien, where he's almost been asked, you can tell, I mean, he doesn't need much encouraging. He's almost been asked to play as an outfield player at times when, you know, they're taking short goal kicks to him in the penalty area.
Yes, yes.
So, which is, no one else does that. So, PKMTT put the ball down on the 6-yard box and they play it to him. They split and he dribbles out the back and comes out of his penalty area with it. So, that's one of the influences we're seeing from Setien in fact that he wants to use him as a third centre back at times. As I said, Busquets is playing much better. I think the form of Messi is a slight concern in terms of goal scoring because that's what they rely on. I mean, it's fantastic when you're not playing as well as you normally do in front of goal to still continue game after game to create chances for your teammates. And I mean, the move for the first goal, the pass from Messi, the finish from Griezmann was top draw, absolutely brilliant. Likewise, the second goal. You know, the movement was good, better passing, both fullbacks involved, one crossing it to the other one to score. It was Barcelona. Watching them then, you're looking at it and thinking, on top of the Betis game last week, watching the first half, apart from the first 10 or 15 minutes, you're thinking, this is going in the right direction. And in the second half, it just completely fell apart. I mean, it was, again, we give credit to Celta, we have to give credit to Getafe, although they didn't get the benefit of picking up a point and getting a result. But Barcelona played totally into their hands. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was a mission, I thought. I didn't realise the rivalry between Quique Setién and Bordalás. No handshake before the game, no handshake after the game. It goes back to when one was manager of Lugo and one was manager of Alcorcón and Setién criticised the tactics of Bordalás. So it's an ongoing issue. And it almost looked to me as if Setién felt he had the advantage, which he does. He has world-class superstars and he has Lionel Messi. Trying to do it in the most purest form that he could find to defeat his arch rival to the extent that it almost cost him the game. You know,
yeah,
so I'm looking at Ansu Fati playing ahead of Arturo Vidal, who played really well last week. But Vidal's a hard nut, he's aggressive, he puts his foot in. Ansu Fati is the purest form up against Alan Neom. Can he get the better of him? And it almost proved costly. And when Barcelona were trying to play out the back at all costs, encouraged by the coach, and of course, Bordalás, his team, they want to get in your face. They want to close you down on the edge of the penalty area. And it worked, and it worked, and it worked. And what amazed me was that Barcelona didn't respond. They kept playing the same and just hoping that something happened up the other end and one of the counter-attacks, or hope, keeping their fingers crossed that no one did what Angel did. You know, fantastic goal to put them back in the game. So that was the big surprise for me, that serial winners in that team didn't respond and you know, in the way that they probably should have done to make sure that they stayed at minimum 3 points behind Real Madrid, because that game, that could have been a draw quite easily. I mean, Getafe probably, if I'm being honest, deserved something from that game.
We've discussed Bordalás quite a few times, and I think we're both of the view that they don't do anything. He's not a criminal, is he? You know, they don't do anything particularly terrible.
No. They're
competitive and aggressive. They do minor things that are wrong that other clubs do. Their main thing is the intensity with which they play the game, which last time I looked was not against the rules. Apparently, he's learning English. Can you see him moving on? Would he ever get to, given that, if you want to say it, snobbery against him that you mentioned, Quique Setien, would he ever get to go to a glamorous club?
Yeah, I would like to hope that a club's, we're talking Premier League, if he's learning English, yeah. I would hope that Premier League, whoever recruits these managers, would look at what he's had to work with in terms of budget, finance, the players that he's buying. He's taken on loan at a player from Stoke City who played yesterday and played well against Barcelona. He's got three 30-something, one of them's 37-year-olds up front. So perhaps, you know, he has a style of play, but that's clear to see. He has his principles, his fundamentals that he believes in. But he's never had a job where he's got the players that Quique Setién has. I'm pretty sure he's a smart enough guy to know that he works with what is available to him, what the club he works for, what they can afford. But I don't know if anyone saw it. It was a really interesting clip on La Liga TV about it showed him in the change room before the game, motivating his players as they were finishing off, getting changed and whatever. And all he kept saying was, he kept repeating it in different phrases, but basically the gist of it was, we are a powerful team. You are powerful players. And he kept repeating that in different ways. And it was all about, so you kind of watching it as a player, I'm looking at it and thinking, if that's said as many times as you think, you know, we've heard it in a 1 minute clip, he must be saying that to them all the time. So using that motivation to, you know, those players would have gone out against Barcelona yesterday, knowing full well, feeling that we are a powerful team. I'm a powerful player, and we're playing against players that we can overpower. So it was fascinating to watch. I mean, it started off, you thought, what's he going to be saying here? And it was just the sheer fact he kept repeating it to individuals, to the group as they were getting dressed and just before they went out to play the game. And it was a constant mantra. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Just repeating it. So it was getting into the players' heads. So he's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing. I totally respect what he has done with Getafe. And seeing Alan Niam up against Fatty, it was Beauty and the Beast. And I have to say that the Beast won in the end. It was just, you know, every time Fatty went to run past him and went to show a bit of skill, Alan Niam just used his power. It wasn't overly aggressive. It wasn't dirty. He wasn't fouling him. It was just, you know, you show I'm more powerful than you. So it was a really good performance from Getafe. Barcelona just sneaked over the line. They're 1 point behind Real Madrid. They've got lots of issues to sort out. They look a million miles away from being a team that can win La Liga, but I wouldn't bet against them doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these two now, isn't it? Because there's a big gap formed, isn't there, now between two and three, which we've sort of known, I think, for a while, haven't we, that it was going to pan out this way and be those two, perhaps a little earlier than we would have wanted. I see also that they dug out the old Animo Usman T-shirts that they must have had out three times before. Because he's out again, which is precisely, you know, the point I was making about a player such as Griezmann. How robust he is and what you get in terms of value for money. So Barcelona, it's a weird situation, Terry, isn't it, where because they've got a player out for the season, they can go and buy a player on this emergency arrangement if they want to. And Hell was one of those linked. Obviously, scoring a really nice goal against them was pretty handy. Graham Hunter in the commentary say, why not Chukwueze? He's got a release clause in his contracts. So what would you do if you were Barcelona now in this situation and you're allowed to go and spend some money? Well, they haven't got the greatest record of spending money, have they? So where would you go? What would you do?
Well, they haven't got the greatest amount of finance available, hence why we're talking about Angel, William Jose, Loren, Roger Marti was one which I thought, you know, might be of interest to Barcelona. And last week, his name was linked with that position. So because they haven't got the money, that they're buying a stopgap, which you kind of feel if they was to buy Angel, let's just use him for instance. If they was to buy Angel for 10 million, something, his buyout clause, they're not going to need him next season. So they probably end up selling him back. You know where he'll end up, back at Getafe for about 5 million. So it's purely a stopgap, because if they were buying a player, a genuine player, for the future, for the next 3, 4, 5 years, none of these players would be mentioned. The fact that we're not mentioning players that they should be linked with is because they haven't got the money. So I think that dictates where they're going. I still don't think personally they should be allowed to, you know, not just Barcelona. I don't think anybody should be allowed to do it, I think, unless it's a goalkeeping crisis. That's the only position I think it should stand. And because we joked about Arda Turan is a Barcelona player still. You'd think that would come into the equation somewhere, that, hang on, you've got this, he was world-class. I know he's had issues, but he still belongs to you, and he's been out on loan, and he's back at the club. He hasn't got a club. So use him as a replacement. That's your bad planning. You allowed Carlos Alenia to go on loan to Real Betis. Carlos Perez, they sold to Rome. So it's poor planning, which follows on from the theme that most of the things that Barcelona have done lately in terms of planning have been poor. So the fact they're allowed, they can't be treated any different just because they're Barcelona. It's not just a rule for Barcelona. So they're allowed to do it. But it does seem strange, the names that are being linked, with all due respect to them, in normal circumstances, any other transfer window, they wouldn't be linked with Barcelona. So it's a strange one, what they're going to do. I said Maxi Gomez would be my first choice, go and pay his, but they haven't got the money. So that's the big problem. Also, we've got to mention Coutinho's out on loan at Bayern Munich. So that's another part of the bad planning. You know, it's a strange loophole that they're, you know, not they're using, that clubs can use.
Yeah. I mean, it seems a strange thing, given that they've won the La Liga in the last couple of years, but it's not a well-structured club from the top, is it? They've got away with having had good players in, paying them a fortune, because you look at Barcelona and their worldwide support, the people around the world listening to us who are Barcelona fans, big stadium, reasonably good TV money, go a long way in the Champions League. How come you've got no money? How come you're not able to be splashing the cash around? And I suppose you look at it and you say, bad transfer business, such as Ousmane Dembele throwing money away in a panic because they rather than being seen to bank the Neymar money and spend it wisely, they felt obliged to go and chuck it away straight away. And it just seems like successive bad planning and then panicky buys, and they're sort of left with this incredibly small, relatively fragile squad.
Griezmann one last summer.
Yeah.
That they did that far too quick, and then there was a chance of getting Neymar, and they'd spent the money. Yeah. You know, that 120 million that they paid, Griezmann's buyout clause, if you pan a buyout clause, I'm pretty sure that's all paid up in one go. So it's, you know, they, once they'd spent that, there was no chance of Neymar joining last summer, when it was clear he was the popular choice. The club wanted him back, the players wanted him back, but they'd done their dough on Griezmann. I'm not saying it was a bad choice, it was just bad planning in the fact that they did the Griezmann deal practically as soon as the season ended. Then it was just a case of waiting until a particular date, wasn't it, where he's price dropped about 100 million.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And that's when they were able to sign him, because there was a rule, he had a clause in his contract that after a certain date, the price went from 200 and something to 100 and something. But, and then it was, oh, Neymar's available. Oh, but we've spent all the money we had already. So, I mean, there's been some good buys along the way. I'm not just slagging them off for the fun of it, but the planning is the thing that's led them to this situation now, where they only had Suarez, Messi, Dembele and Griezmann anyway, which is too light in terms of, and then you're looking at Ansu Fati and Carlos Perez, and, you know, at the moment doing the Christian Teo role where they're filling in and coming on as subs, and Cuenca, Jefferson, Suarez, Bojan, these young players that come through that fulfil that part of, you know, coming off the bench in the easier games or the games where they're leading. But they haven't even got that at the moment. It's they're relying on a just 17-year-old to be playing in a lot of their games at the moment. So it's terrible planning.
And a few players out on loan who would be playing, who would be getting game time if they were still at the club. Shall we take a break? And I tell you what, I know we've got to do the rest of La Liga, Terry, but I'm also interested in your views on Manchester City as well. So shall we do that briefly after the break, and then we'll get back on with the rest of La Liga. Welcome back to El Tan and John's La Liga Weekly, and I'm going to break the rules of not talking about La Liga. Obviously, we've got Champions League coming up in the week with the Spanish first leg of the Spanish-English clash, as it were, Atleti against Liverpool. We'll do Atleti next, but I promised everyone, Terry, your views on Manchester City. So as it stands, they're being chucked out of European competition for the next two seasons. Fined as well. I think the fine is I know it's a lot of money in the normal, any kind of normal sphere of life, but it's not particularly in this context. I don't think it's the 2 year ban that is the huge thing. Give us your view. Have you got sympathy for City or not?
No. Not if they're guilty. No, of course not. My sympathy would be if they're the only team that found guilty. I think we all know the other one that everybody suspects are in a similar position, which is PSG. And the laws are there. Everybody has to abide by the laws. It's they don't just do it for fun and hope to leave millions of loopholes that people can come up with, you know, sponsorship deals that are not entirely all that they suggest they are. It's a totally different matter whether you agree with the rules or the laws in place. But if the laws are there and the rules are there, which in this case they are, and if they're broken, then, you know, teams have to be punished. Clubs have to be punished. It's similar to Saracens, I guess, in the rugby. The laws are there for everybody. Yeah. You can't have one team going off and pretending to do the right thing when they're clearly not. But as I say, it's a different matter entirely if you agree whether it should be, well, if you've got the money, if you're PSG, if you're Manchester City, if you're backed with incredible wealth, you can spend what you want on players. That's a different matter. But at this moment in time, the laws are there to stop clubs doing that. So if they've done it, then, you know, and it does appear, whether they can appeal and change the decision. But if they've broken the rules, then I've got no problem with what's, you know, how it's been dealt with in terms of Manchester City.
Two things occur to me. One, I've got no sympathy with City over this argument, where they question UEFA's right to make a decision, which seems baffling to me. They say, oh, well, UEFA are acting as judge and jury. And I think, well, it is their competition. Mm. They are the governing body of European football. So that seems the obvious thing to happen. There is the Court of Arbitration for Sport. So there is a higher court you can take it to, which is what will happen next. And we'll see. They might get it reduced. Having said that, I do have, I saw a writer, David Goldblatt, who's a very interesting writer. He made a very good point. Not much you can do about it now. He said financial fair play happened about 20 years too late. It should have come in at the start of the Champions League, because his point is that what happened is that the big clubs with the big income got themselves into this very dominant position. And then the financial fair play rules are not just about debt, which they probably should be, but they're about owner investment. And so, in a sense, what happens with the financial fair play, it just locks in the advantage of the clubs that have already got all the fans. So, and you end up with the rich getting richer, which is not very interesting for football. And obviously the big clubs do that all the time. And then I've also got very little sympathy for the big clubs when they start banging on about poor us, we have to play the odd FA Cup replay every couple of seasons. You know, I've got no sympathy at all. So I've got a little bit of sympathy for City. But having said that, then you're arguing that, you know, this sort of oil money from the Middle East should be allowed to come in and change the whole of football. And then you lose everyone's sympathy at that point, don't you? So you know, the argument sort of goes nowhere. And you come back to your point, which I agree with, that, you know, if they, you know, the rules are there and you've got to live by the rules. Otherwise, it's chaos. So, you know, no sympathy.
Manchester City and PSG have done is tried to play catch up and shortcut it with billions of pounds, which that's their own right to do that. I'm not totally against
You would have thought
that.
So, but it's outside of the rules, isn't it? So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the thing. If you've broken the rules, you face the punishment. The consequences are going to be massive for Manchester City. The manager, the players, at a certain time in their career not going to waste 2 years not being involved in Champions League football. You know, players like De Bruyne is 29, for instance. He's not going to want to wait around till he's 31, 32 before he's back in it again.
Do you really think that will happen? Do you think, can you see players walking out on City or asking to leave City now?
Mm. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, I do. I think if you're young, if you're 22, 23, you'll live with it. But I think if you're 29, as in the case of Kevin De Bruyne, and it's not your fault that you're going to be, you know, sitting at home watching the Champions League for the next 2 years. You'll be 31, 32 when it's done. Your best days might have gone past. So, yeah, no, I think there will be some that will look at it that way, for sure.
Okay, let's crack back on with La Liga, shall we? So, Valencia 2, Atleti 2. As ever, Atleti started well. They were in front inside 15 minutes. And then, to be fair, it was a decent game after that. Set pieces for Valencia, a weird goal by Kondogbia, where I think he kicks it with both feet at some point, doesn't he? And it sort of scuffs off the bottom of his foot and into the goal, which is a shame for Thomas Partey because he scored an absolute cracker. But it is just one win in seven. So away at the Mestalla, you think decent result, but you know, one win in seven isn't good for Atleti.
No, it was one of those games I looked at and I thought, do you know what? I'm not going to be critical of either of these teams. It was a really good game. You're right. A draw away at Valencia isn't the worst result in the world for Atletico. And a draw at home for Valencia against Atletico, being behind twice, players missing through injury. It's a decent game. It's a decent result for them as well. And I thought both teams played well. I thought it was slightly alarming from Atletico's point of view, conceding two from set pieces, being ahead twice as well. So perhaps at the start of the season, we thought they were going to be secure at the back, as secure as they've been in the past. I would even criticise Oblak for the Kondogbia goal, because when you look at it, first of all, you're looking at Marcus Llorente, who played well, scored the first goal, and was blamed. I blamed him. I'm looking at him thinking, who's picking Kondogbia up? And it's Marcus Llorente. And you're thinking, bit of a mismatch there, but he has to do better. But Kondogbia actually does whatever he does to bundle it home on the six-yard box from a set piece that's 40 yards away. So I'm looking at Oblak there and thinking, it's an in-swinger. He probably should have come and dealt with that and bailed his teammate out. So that's the only way I would be critical of Atletico in that game. I thought they you know, considering the players there without as well, I thought it was a really good game. Smashing to see a really attractive game on a Friday night. Atletico in the Champions League this week. Doesn't it make sense to, you know, to play one of the Champions League teams, if possible, on a Friday night to give them the extra day or so's rest? And you know, I'm not saying bad games are on normally on Friday nights, but it's not often we get to see a game of this quality. If it was a brilliant game, and probably on us just about even in the end.
Are you optimistic in any way about Atleti against Liverpool? Can you make a case for them?
Oh, definitely. I look at Liverpool's performances of late, haven't been great, but still good enough to beat everyone in the Premier League. And I think the Atletico situation is that they prefer to be the underdog. You know, for a few years now, they haven't even been underdogs when they play Barcelona and Real Madrid. So I think that against Atletico, Morata came back at the weekend, had some playing time. It'd be interesting to see if any others can make a recovery. So they're clearly not going to be at their strongest. But no, I look and I think, yeah, with Simeone, they'll be well organised. They'll have a plan. The plan will be to try and get a 0-0 in the first leg at home. I've no doubt about that. There'll be, first and foremost, everything will be about keeping a clean sheet in the first leg at home and rely on, you know, going to Anfield, maybe, you know, keeping it tight again, trying to get a break, a counter-attack, scoring an away goal. So they're going to go into it as firm underdogs against the current champions. And I think that suits Atletico more. So, yeah, no, I would make Liverpool favourites. That's why I'm saying Atletico are underdogs. But no, I give Atletico a chance in the two legs against Liverpool, definitely.
Right, OK, let's crack on to the rest of La Liga. So, I suppose that takes us down to the... We'll have a look at the bottom again, where it's all close. Sevilla 2, Espanyol 2. And Espanyol, sort of remarkable improvements in form, and yet they somehow stubbornly stay bottom of the league because all of the teams down there picked up some kind of point. And Sevilla somehow stay in the battle for the Champions League places, despite a pretty terrible set of results, because they lost to Celta Vigo last week. They drew with Alaves the week before. So that's, you know, you'd have looked at those and said 9 points, possibly, or 7 points. And they've ended up getting, what is it, 1 or 2 points from those three games. So there's not a lot of gap between, not a lot of difference in quality between almost top and the very bottom.
Yeah, it's one win in the last six for Sevilla, surprisingly. Mm. So, yeah, no, it's a disappointing result for Sevilla, disappointing set of results for Sevilla, who seem to have become unravelled a bit. You know, at the start of the season, we were talking about this new version of Seville and, you know, how they were robust and more aggressive and stronger and going back to Getafe, powerful. They suddenly look slow, in my opinion. You know, the games I'm seeing, I'm looking at the individuals playing and they look quite a slow, ponderous team, purely built on strength and power. So Suso and Ocampos, the goal scorers, Suso in particular had a really good game. He looked lively today. And Espanyol, with no Real de Tomas, you're thinking you've got no chance. But they responded well. Belief is on the up for not only them, you know, other teams at the bottom. Mallorca picked up another point, another win at home. That's 20 points at home, 1 point away. So they're still fighting, but it's going to have to be done at home in their own stadium. The disappointing one for me are Leganés, how they're behaving and approaching the relegation fight compared to Celta, Espanyol and Mallorca this weekend.
Yeah, 0-0 draw with Betis, who had... What was Borja Iglesias sent off for? I couldn't quite see. It's some kind of confrontation with the bench, isn't it? But I'm not quite sure what he did. What else happened in that game.
He shoved a member. But this is... Right, Leganés are at home. Let's put this into context. Leganés are at home. They attacked for about the first 10 minutes, not with any real style or commitment in terms of chucking players forward. It was just a fast start to the game. And then as the game went on, they just retreated and retreated and retreated to the extent that I think that confused Real Betis, who were playing away from home against a team that they expected at the bottom of the league to be fighting and coming out and attacking. And it took Betis far too long to realise they're not attacking us. They've got one player in the attacking half. If they've got, you know, five at the back, four in midfield, the two wide midfield players were both could be considered fullbacks. It was just a bizarre setup. And then towards the end of the game, when it's 0-0, bear in mind, the ball goes out for a throw-in. It goes near the bench of Leganés, and one of the coaching staff at Leganés held on to the ball. So Betis time wasting. So you're time wasting at home, and it's 0-0. And you need points you need wins to stay up. And the coaching staff held onto the ball and Borja Iglesias shoved one. And it could have been worse. I mean, he shoved him, not massive shove, but there's a little gap between two benches. And this fella goes between the two gap and falls down the middle of it. So it was clear it was going to be a red card. But what irritated me a bit at the end of that game was both sets of players looked bemused. Betis were disappointed with how they played. They were awful. They were unhappy with the result. The Leganés players were unhappy with the result as well. And then Javier Aguirre turns around to the bench, to the supporters, I'm guessing to the director's box, and celebrated with a clenched fist. His team had got the point and the 0-0 they were searching for. And I'm thinking, he's certainly got them going in the right direction. But to celebrate a 0-0 draw at home against Betis, who are mid-table and are playing like a mid-table team, is bizarre. As I say, to the extent, I think he confused Betis that, hang on, you're meant to be attacking us and we've set up to play on the counter-attack and you're not having it. You're just playing five defenders, four across midfield, and Martin Braithwaite is about a mile and a half away from anyone else in the team. So it was a bizarre game. I deserve a medal for watching the whole of that match, I must be honest.
Yes, yes. Well done, well done. Now, Granada 2, Valladolid 1, the Saturday night game. I don't want to moan too much about the scheduling, but, you know, I used to like a really good Saturday, a glamorous Saturday night game. And with, as we say, all due respect to Granada versus and Valladolid, it's not a glamorous tie. Having said that, entertaining end to the game. And I'd commentated earlier, Terry, on the West Brom Nottingham Forest game. And the because I'm not a big fan of VAR, but there were quite a few really confusing incidents in that tilted the game. And I was thinking, oh, I don't know, we could have done with VAR in that one. And then I watched Granada, and the amount of time it took to let the goals happen. And I was just because it should have been an exciting finish to the game, but it's somehow dragged on forever. And I suppose, other than me moaning about VAR, Valladolid, slightly unluckily, are getting dragged into this relegation battle now, aren't they?
Yeah, again, though, people know that listen to our podcast over the years, I'm not a fan of teams that just try and draw their way to safety without playing attacking football of any kind. And Valladolid fall into that category. I think they're drawn 11 this season. They play two up front, which is a sign that they're trying to be attacking, but the rest of the team are miles away from Enizuno and Guardiola. They're hard to score against. They're hard to beat. So much credit to Granada in this game because they had the Copa del Rey semi-final where they just about held on to only get beat 1-0 to give them a chance in the second leg against Athletic Club. And they could, you know, it's a big moment for Granada. They go into the second leg. I didn't realise it's not for another month, which is bizarre in the fact that we've had week after week after week, and then we come to the two-legged semi-finals a month between the two legs. But they've got a chance of going, you know, 1-0 behind, playing at home, every chance of pulling off a result. For them to come off the back of that game the other night, make a few changes, to go behind, bizarrely with a cross-come shot that goes in at the near post, to fight back, get the equaliser, and then an absolutely brilliant goal from Carlos Fernandez in, I think it was the 96th minute of the game. You saw the celebrations of the players, the coach, the support staff, you know, the fans as well. And, you know, for them to come back in that manner when they would have been more fatigued than Valladolid, to be behind, to come back and win three more, you know, valuable points, keeps them well away from relegation troubles. I think it was a really pleasing end to a Saturday night's football, actually. I think the goal from Carlos Fernandez topped it off. It was a brilliant goal, and we shouldn't forget that he's got more goals than the Sevilla strikers that's allowed him out on loan to play for Granada this season. So certainly a player to look out for, I think, for a return back to Sevilla. Certainly if they've got any sense, they would do.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they'd loan him out again at the end of August, which is sign four more players to replace him. And let's have a look. Oh, so Athletic against Osasuna. So nice finish. Oh, yeah, the only goal for Osasuna. Very, very handy result for them. Athletic, as you say, going strong in the Copa del Rey. No win in nine in La Liga. It sort of crept up on me a little bit, that, isn't it? You know, that's not a good situation. They're 5 points from nine games, three consecutive defeats, and they're down now in mid-table.
Yeah, no, it isn't. He made one or two changes today. Where they played the three at the back, the wing-backs. A young player called Unai Vencedor came into midfield, gave a really good account of himself. Interesting enough, he took every set piece, so he's obviously got talent in that department. Garitano, I thought, panicked by taking off Fier Libre, who played well in the first half. He looked quite lively. Goal scoring is their problem. And he took him off at half-time. They didn't look any better until Adariz come on. He still looks the best centre-forward they've got, the age of 39. And I have to be honest, I feel sympathy for them in this particular game. They battered Osasuna. After Osasuna got their goal, where it was pretty even up until that point, And then, you know, the nature of playing away from Osasuna, it's a big game for them. Good travelling support, playing at San Mames. And after that, they retreated and went into protection mode for the rest of the game. Just about held on. Athletic hit the woodwork twice. Adderis had a brilliant header, come back off the post with a goalkeeper beaten. The young midfielder I talked about, Ventador, he hit the bar with a free kick. It was last-ditch defending, five at the back for Osasuna, three midfield players working their socks off. They rode their luck. Goalkeeper pulled off some good saves. Really, being honest, though, Athletic should have won that comfortably today. So it's just the way things are going for them at this moment. But it is a worry that they're, you know, lacking goals, they're, you know, lacking wins, slipping down the table, which is not what they want to do. But they have scored, they're scoring less than a goal a game, 23 and 24. They've only conceded 20, which is the third best in the division. But it would have been a frustrating evening for the Athletic supporters in that game against Osasuna.
So one more game, Terry. A couple of great finishes for Villarreal to beat Levante by 2-1. They're doing all right, Villarreal, aren't they? And we've much criticised Calleja through the season, but as everyone else seems to be dropping away, they're sort of ploughing on, picking up decent results here and there. I think they're sixth now.
And it was a really good derby. I mean, it was Levante played their part. They didn't come there looking for a draw, looking for a point. They took the game to Villarreal. It was 50-50. I would say the big difference was that the quality players that Villarreal have are playing well. So Moreno is now playing on the right, coming inside on his left foot of a front three. He's not playing on the wing. He's playing slightly more closer to Alcacer. So that's developing. Scored a great goal using that skill. Perfect. Coming in from that side, picking up a loose ball and firing on with his left foot into the corner. Moy Gomez is playing fantastically well. Cazorla is playing fantastic. Trigueros is playing out of his skin as well. So that gives you an idea of the quality there. You know, when you're talking about Cazorla, Trigueros, Moreno, Alcacer, Moy Gomez, really good to watch at the moment going forward. And I say, Levante was slightly unlucky, but Villarreal certainly deserved to win that. I didn't realise how two-footed and how similar Moy Gomez has become to Santi Cazorla, who was still absolutely brilliant in this game. But Moy Gomez, his touches, his skills, his control, his balance, he reminds me, you know, a lot of Santi Cazorla. And I'm kind of pleased he's doing well because I never knew why they let him go in the first place. And he drifted around for Sporting Gijón, I think it was. They got him back for $1.5 million. When I look at him now, I think he's a real accomplished footballer with a lovely first touch, intelligent. What a steal that was for Villarreal, getting him back for €1.5 million.
Right. Well, I think we'll leave it there, Terry. So enjoy the European football. It's good to have it back, isn't it? I must say. You know, it's good for it to have a break. And then I'm looking forward to seeing those games this week. This is the strange round of games, isn't it, where it sort of takes about 5 weeks to play these games. Man City's ban will be over by the time this round of games has come to a
conclusion.
I'm looking
forward to
the... let's enjoy them. Go on.
Hetafe
Ajax. Atalanta. Which game, sorry?
Hetafe against Ajax. I'm looking forward to seeing how that
pans out. Oh, right, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
In the Europa League.
Yeah, should be... yeah, interesting contrasting styles. Should be some good games coming up this week, aren't there? Champions League and then Europa League Thursday night. Right, and then so we'll come back and we'll have a look at next weekend's La Liga games as well. The big two are playing on Saturday, aren't they? Obviously, with Champions League coming up the following midweek after that. So enjoy all of your football this week, Champions League, Europa League, La Liga, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.